Okay, we're beginning here on the top of Chavav Amud Aleph. The Mishnah just discussed the machloka that we saw between Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi. When a person says, Harizu Tumrat Olah, Tumrat Shlamim, as to what is the outcome of such a statement, Rabbi Meir says that the first statement is binding, whereas Rabbi Yossi says both statements are binding. And the way we explained the Mishnah was that Rabbi Meir believes Tfos Lashon Rishon, that we figure on the person's first statement as being the important statement or the statement that carries weight. Everything that he says afterwards is a retraction of that first statement. Whereas Rabbi Yossi believes, Af v'gmar dvarav adam nifas, that even with the completion of his statement, a person has meaning or wants meaning to his statement. He's not relenting, he's not retracting his position, but rather, he couldn't say it at once. So he says it sequentially, but he means to say that both should be effective. That was the machloket that we saw in the Mishnah. Now we're going to have a gemara that we saw in Zvachim that takes their machloket in a slightly different direction, which is Amar Rabbi Yitzchak Rabbi Yossi. We have here the Gemara in Zvachim has Rabbi Yosef Amar Rabbi Yochanan. Hakol modim. Everybody agrees. The Omer tcholzo v'achakach tcholzo, that this one should take effect and then that one should take effect. Divrei Hakol tfos lashon rishon. Everybody holds that tfos lashon rishon. I mean that means Rabbi Yossi and Rabbi Meir think that the first thing that he states is binding. Everything afterwards is a retraction, and therefore it's not binding. So, for instance, if he said Harezu Tumrat Olah ve'achar kach Tumrat Shlamim, then it's clear that the Tumrat Olah takes effect, and the Tumrat Shlamim does not take effect according to everyone, because he made them sequential statements in the way that he formulated it. He said this, and that then this is a time-bound statement, which says that it will succeed the first statement, and therefore the first statement is binding. Whatever happens afterwards is a retraction, and we don't pay heed to it. On the other hand, if he says, Lo tocholzu, ela im kein chaltozo, he says this one will not take effect, ela if the other one takes effect. He puts a condition inside of his statement, which says the first statement will only be effective if the second statement is effective. So in this case, he says, Harezu tumrat shlamim, imzu gam tumrat olah, that this is a tumrat shlamim, as long as it's also a tumrat olah. He conditioned the two on each other. Everybody agrees, the kadshe. Then even Rabbi Meir will agree that he bound his statements together in the way that he formulated it. And it's not a retraction. It's a statement that conditions one on the other. And that condition makes them binding together, and they are both effective in that case. That's also Rabbi Meir's position. So again here, the way that we're structuring it, it's not about tfos lashon rishon versus because we see here that even in certain instances, Rabbi Yossi agrees that tfos lashon rishon. In certain instances, even Rabbi Meir agrees that the totality of your statement is binding. Lo nechleku, so where is their machloket? Elkegon mishnatenu. Like the formulation in our Mishnah, damar tumrat olah, tumrat shlamim. Where he says, tumrat olah, tumrat shlamim. Look at Rashi. Rashi is particular that the Girsa does not have a vav achibur in it. The way that the Gemara we have it is the Girsa of Rashi, which is he said Tumrat Olah Tumrat Shlamim without a vav achibur. According to Rashi, if you said Tumrat Olah vit Tumrat Shlamim, then everybody would agree that it is binding the entire statement because you have a vav achibur in there. The Meiri, others Rishonim, disagree with Rashi and say even with the vav achibur in it, it makes no difference. That the fact that he said the word Tumrat twice is what's meaningful in this instance. So that's the statement over here is Kagom Mishtadenu Damar Tumrat Olah Tumrat Shlamim. The Rabbi Meir Savar Midahavilei the Meimar Tumrat Olah Vishlamim. He could have bound them together in a single Tumura, in a single statement of Tumura, and instead Vamar Tumrat Olah Tumrat Shlamim. Instead, he put a Tumura on each one of them. Havilei Kaomer. It's the equivalent or similar to saying Tacholzo V'Achakach Tacholzo. It's as if you're saying things should happen in a sequential manner. Because if you wanted them to happen simultaneously, you would have bound them together in a single statement of Tumura. The fact that you gave each one of them a Tumurah makes it sound like first Tumurat Olah, then Tumurat Shlamim. Rabbi Yossi Savar, he amar Tumurat Olah Ushlamim. The person's under a mistaken impression, and he thinks that had he said Tumurat Olah Vishlamim, Hava Amina, he would have thought Kedusha Ve'ina Kreva, that that would create Kedusha, but it would not go on the Mizbeach, because you're successful at creating the Kedusha because you joined them together, but that's probably part of the problem here, because you're placing them together on the animal, it makes it so that it can't go on the Mizbeach. But had you said Tumrat Olah u'Tumrat Shlamim, he thinks that that gives it enough power or enough Kedusha that it's able to go onto the Mizbeach. That's the Lashon Rishon that we have in our Gemara. Our Gemara ends Kamash Malan, which is a little bit of a strange language over here. Kamash Malan is referencing back to what this person was thinking, that he was thinking that this would be the case, that Tumurat Olah Shlamim would not work, because it would only make it Kadosh, Ve'ena Kreva. And instead, he said Tumurat Olah, Tumurat Shlamim, thinking that that would be a more effective way to create the Kedusha, and then it would go on the Mizbeach. And therefore, when he said Tumurat Olah, Tumurat Shlamim, it's not like what Rabbi Meir said, that he's trying to separate or segregate them in any way. It's a mistaken impression that he has, and that's why he did it, but he's saying this equivalent of what would have been Tumurat Olah u'Shlamim. The machloket of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Yossi now is how to interpret the meaning of Tumurat Olah Tumurat Shlamim. Do I interpret that as excessive wording, like Rabbi Meir does? And that means that I could have said it simpler. And since I didn't have to say it simpler, it means that I'm relenting, retracting, because I said Tumurat Olah Tumurat Shlamim instead of Tumurat Olah Shlamim. Or according to Rabbi Yossi, it's the same thing. It's not excess words. It's a mistaken thought process that leads him to say this, but it's really as if he's saying Tumurat Olah Tumurat Shlamim. And again, we already identified that they each agree to each other in those instances above, so that Rabbi Meir deems it to be similar to the case of a sequential, and Rabbi Yossi deems it to be a case of a conditional type of Kedusha. So that's the end of our Gemara here. Rashi quotes over here, Lishon Yerushalmi, and he brings the equivalent of a Lishna Achrina over here, and the Shita Mikubeset in Od Gimel has an extensive Lishna Achrina. I'm going to come back and read it in a second, because the next Gemara also is included in the Lishna Achrina, and it's a slightly nuanced difference to it. Over here, there's a question as to whether the Gemara here starts Tana Rabbanan or Vahatanya. So both the Shita Mikubeset and the Bach change it to Vahatanya, whereas the Gersa that we have in our Gemara is Tana Rabbanan. So it would make a difference for the subsequent Gemaras, as well as what's the connection to the previous Gemara. Is this a totally new sugya and a new braita? Or is Vahatanya mean, from this braita we see what we just stated above is true? So that would be the difference as to whether it's Vahatanya b'nichuto or Tana Rabbanan. And then it'll make a difference also for the subsequent braita that we bring, whether that braita is considered to be a new braita, or is it a continuation of the braita that we just brought, or an outcome of the braita that we just brought. So Tana Rabbanan, Homer behemazo, chetziat murat olah, chetziat murat shlamim. Person who says that a animal will be half tumurat olah and half tumurat shlamim. Each half of this animal will take on the kedushat tumurah from a different animal of hekdesh. Kula tikrav olah, devei Rabbi Meir. According to Rabbi Meir, the whole thing becomes an olah, because we again said that you are successful in your first statement. So therefore, behemazu chetziat tumurat olah, and therefore the first statement takes effect or is binding. And since you were makdish, half of the animal, we know that it then spreads to the entirety of the animal. Even though Rabbi Meir is of the opinion that if you say ragla shel zo olah, you say the leg of an animal is an olah, that's all that is an olah. It does not spread to the remainder of the animal. Nevertheless, he does agree that if you are a makdish, half an animal, that half will then spread to the entirety of the animal. So if you're makdish, chetzi of an animal, then that's a davar sheneshamat tluya bo. And since it's a davar sheneshamat tluya bo, it then spreads to the entirety of the animal, and therefore it's entirely an olah. By the time you get to chetziat tumurat shlamim, it's not meaningful, because the animal is already totally kadosh b'kedushat olah already, because the chetziu b'kedushat tumurat olah already spread to the entirety of the animal. Now, over here he uses the word tumurah. Rabbi Yehuda is the other opinion that says that raglash zu olah doesn't spread to the entire animal. Rabbi Yehuda is of the belief that only when you're makdish from the outset, hekdesh and shemat liyabo, does it spread to the entirety of the animal. But by tumurah, that's not the case. That's the view of Rabbi Yehuda. And so the Baal Yehuda Tosafot say that Rabbi Meir clearly holds like Rabbi Yehuda in one part of his position, but does not agree with him in the other part of his position, because over here you see Rabbi Meir believes even when you're doing tumurah, the kedushat olah spreads to the entirety of the animal, even though it wasn't hekdesh from the outset, but rather tumurah. So that's Rabbi Meir's view here, that tfos lashon rishon, and then it spreads to the entirety of the animal, and therefore the shlamim is not effective at all. Chamim omrim, tireh ad shetisev, you set it out to graze until it gets a mum, v'timacher, then it's sold off, monetized, ve'vi b'dmei chetziat tumurat olah, dmei chetziat tumurat shlamim. And half of the proceeds would go towards bringing an olah, the tumurat olah, and half the proceeds would go towards bringing a tumurat shlamim, a shlamim on the mizbeach. So that's similarly, or seems to be similar to what Rabbi Yossi said in our Mishnah, that both are binding over here. The only thing is, I'm a Rabbi Yossi. Rabbi Yossi appears in this Braita as well. Im lekach nitkaven mitchila, if that was his original intent, hol v'yif shalotzi shnei shemot ke'achat, since he doesn't have the capacity to say both of them simultaneously, dvarav ke'ayamim, then his words are binding. Gemara says, Rabbi Yossi, haine rabbanan. Rabbi Yossi is basically saying the same thing as the rabbanan. He's just being minamek. He's explaining that which the rabbanan said. Why did the rabbanan say it? He's explaining why you would say such a thing. The answer of the Gemara is, kula Rabbi Yossi k'tani la. The entire thing is Rabbi Yossi. That entire position of the Chachamim is Rabbi Yossi's position. And Rabbi Yossi is just clarifying or explaining the reason behind that position of the Chachamim, which is that af b'gmar d'varav adam nitpas. That even in the finishing of one's words, we look at the totality of his statement, and that totality of his statement is binding over here, and that's why you get both an olah and a shlamim in this case. Now that works well according to the way we explained before, that the machlok between them is tfos lashon rishon, or af b'gmar d'varav adam nitpas. So that works well in this braita. It fits hand in glove with the Mishnah that we explained before. The problem is for Rabbi Yitzchak or Rabbi Yosef from Rabbi Yochanan, who said their machloket is not about Tfos Lashon Rishon or about Afik Mar Devarav Adam Nitpas, but rather the machloket is about whether the language was excessive or unnecessary. Rabbi Meir believes that if it's excessive language, then it was unnecessary and he is really retracting. As Rabbi Yosef says that he has some mistaken impression. But over here, what do you do? And that's what Tosafot asks over here. According to Rabbi Yitzchak for Rabbi Yosef, Damar, time to Rabbi Meir, Medhavile de Meimar, Velo Mishum, Tfos Loshe Vishon, Achalo Shech le Meimar, Medhavile de Meimar. He says, you can't say over here that he should have said, because there's no should have. He needs to say it, because he couldn't have formulated them together. He needs to say, Chatzia Tumurat Ola, and Chatzia Tumurat Shlamim. He can't say, Chatzia Tumurat Ola Vishlamim, then that has a different meaning completely. There is no alternative wording that you could have used over here, and therefore, Rabbi Meir's position is not then consistent with Rabbi Yitzchak or Rabbi Yosef before. So the Baalei Tosafot then come up with a chiddush over here, which is that Davka Kiamar Tumrat Ola Tumrat Shlamim, the Mashma de Soter Dvarav Sham. Only when he makes statements that are contradictory, are impossible to reconcile, do we need that nimuk, do we need that understanding or explanation for why Rabbi Meir believes what he does. In the case where he says Tumrat Tola and Tumrat Shlamim, which are irreconcilable with each other, then we have to say, why did he do that? Did he have other options? If he had other options, then his doing that means he's making sequential statements. If he had no other option, then he must be saying a totality of his statement. That's the way that Rabbi Meir would view it. So over here, where his statements are not mutually exclusive. Over here, the statement is Chetziat Tumrat Tola, Chetziat Tumrat Shlamim. So over there, the statements aren't mutually exclusive because he said half is this and half is that. They don't contradict each other. So in that case, you don't need the reason of Midahavale the Meimar. You don't need the reasoning of he should have said or he could have said. Because over here, by the mere fact that each one can devolve in its own right, that's exactly what happens. The first one devolves and then the second one devolves. And once the first one devolves, there's nothing to discuss anymore because it takes over the entirety of the animal. And therefore, it's Kadosh B'Tushat Ola. And he says, similarly, our Mishnah that we spoke about with regards to Shlamim and an Ola, where he says that he, Shlamim, the mother is a Shlamim, and Vlada is an Ola, and the Vlad inside is an Ola. Over there, Rabbi Meir also says the entirety of the animal and the fetus are Shlamim, not because you could have said it in a different way, but because your statements are both fine, they're not contradictory, they're not mutually exclusive. And therefore, each statement by itself will take effect. And since once you say Hishlamim, it takes effect and then affects the fetus, once you come back and then try to say the fetus is an Ola, it's too late because the Hishlamim has already taken effect. That's an important extension of what we saw in Rabbi Yisrael Rabbi Yosef by the Baalei Tosafot into the Gemara over here. Now, if you look in the Shita Mikubetzet, he has a different Gemara or Girsa, similar to what Rashi has. The Rabbeinu Gershom also has this Lishnachrina with slight variations in it. And the Lishna Achrina reads like this. Lishna Achrina, Mahadar Kahadar Bey, Mi, Tmurat Ola, the Tmurat Shlamim. Ho Vachain, Tfos, Tchilat Dvarav, Tmurat Ola. So the Lishna Achrina says that the reason for Rabbi Meir's position is because his statement of Tmurat Shlamim is the equivalent of a retraction from the Tmurat Ola, and therefore the Tmurat Ola is the only thing that takes effect. Rabbi Yossi Savar, Hadein Gavra Hu, Dekotoi. He's making a mistake. The savar ilava mina tmura al ola v'al shlamim. If I don't say the word tmura on both of them, lo tafsa tmurat tarvayu. They will not take effect at all. So the difference between the first lashon and this lashon, in the first lashon, or the way that we have it in the Gemara, his mistake was that he thought it'd be kedusha ve'ena kreva. It would take on the kedusha, but couldn't go on the mizbeach. Therefore, he repeated tmura twice in order to make it that it has full-fledged kedusha and it can go on the mizbeach. In this version, he said tmura twice because he thought if he didn't say the word tmura twice, it wouldn't work at all. There would be no kedusha at all. Because he said, if I said tmurat olam shlamim, that's a mixing and matching, and it doesn't work. I need to say tmura on each one of them for it to be effective. That's why he says, lav amina tmura alola vashlamim, lo tafsa tmura tarvayu. It wouldn't work. Shumhaki hu damar tmura tola tmura shlamim. That's why he said it. Ella d'dein hu tmura tola ushlamim by the name. And that's why I need to say both tmura tola and tmura shlamim. Behoil b'chein. So this is different than our Gemara, very different than our Gemara, but kinanle. Because of that, we check him out. I amar mehadar hu dehadre. If he tells us he was relenting, retracting his statement, then it's like tfos lashon rishon. I amar litmurat shnehem dvarav kayamim. If he said that he intended for both of them to become tmura, then his words are binding. Vehatanya. And then he has vetanya. Now this braita is supportive of what we're saying here because Rabbi Yossi's position in this braita is similar to what he says above. And this braita is different than the braita we have in the Gemara, which is, Harizu tumrat ola tumrat shlamim, Harizu tumrat ola divir Rabbi Meir. That's the same as we have in our braita. Chamim omrim, tir'eh achistei, v'ti macher v'ti avi b'damei chatsia tumrat ola, d'mei chatsia tumrat shlamim, same as our braita in the Gemara. But now, Rabbi Yossi omer, yivadek, you check him. Or the way that the Rabbi Gershom has, the Gershom says, b'din hoshi yivadek, that you should check him. Im amar lekach nitkavanti. If that's what I intended for, elishalo hayiti yachol likrot shnei shemot keachad. I thought that that's what I really intended for, but I didn't think you could do two of them at once. Tvarav kayamim. Im amar mishikariti shem l'rishon chazarti b'kiyamti mishikariti shem l'sheni. He says after I called the first one, then I decided to put the second one in as well. Ein tvarav achronim klum. And then again, Rav Yossi haynu rabbanan, and that's where we have the conclusion. The Kulo Rabbi Yossi. But in that way, the Rabbi Yossi of this Braita in the Lishna Achrina matches with Rabbi Yossi's position in the original statement as to why he argues on Rabbi Meir. In the original statement, he argues on Rabbi Meir because he thinks that Tmurat Olah and Tmurat Shlamim, the guy thought that he wouldn't be successful at creating the Tmurat at all. And then he says it in order to have it devolve upon the animal, some Kiddushat Tmurat. And then Rabbi Yossi says, you check him out and figure out what he said. Was he retracting or was he actually trying to get both of them on? And then the Braita says exactly that too. That Rabbi Yossi says, but kinan. So according to the Lishna Achrina, Rabbi Yossi disagrees with Rabbi Meir, but he doesn't disagree wholesale and say, yes, it's binding no matter what. Both of his statements are binding. He says, you ask him, you clarify with him what happened, and then based on the clarification, then it's either tfos lashon rishon like Rabbi Meir, or it's like the Chachamim's position, which is that apigmar d'rab adam nitpas, and it's chetzi ola chetzia shlamim. That's the other version of this Gemara. And again, it has a slight difference in what Rabbi Yossi's opinion is as to whether it's just Abugmar Durab Adem Nitbas, or is it that we check him out and understand what he said. Yes, it could be Abugmar Durab Nitbas, but we first need to see what his intent was before we say such a thing. Right now, our Gemara continues, Tanya Idach. We have another Braita. If you say that the original, like above, when we started this Braita before, it's Hintan Rabbanan, then that's a new start of a section over here, the sugya, and then it doesn't connect the braita to the previous sugya, and then Tani Idach is either something connected to or similar to the braita that we just brought. On the other hand, if you think that the other braita would start out Vahatanya, then this braita would start out Tanur Banat, but then we'd be moving into a new sugya where it's separate or different than that which we said above. So that would really depend on what you think the next statement is. Is the next statement similar to what we said above, or is it differentiated from what we said above? Tanya Idach, Behema Chetzia Ula V'Chetzia Chatat. So here, this is in primary Hekdesh, where he says that this animal is half an Ula and half a Chatat. Tikrav Ula, Tivir Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir says that it's an Ula. Rabbi Yossi Omer Tamut, Kontzino Tole Kippa, V'Shavin. Everybody agrees, V'Omer Chetzia Chatat V'Chetzia Ula Shetamut. If he said that half of it is a Chatat and half of it is an Ula, then it dies. Shavin. What does it mean they both agree? Mani. Who's the one that's coming to agree in this case? Rabbi Meir. it must be Rabbi Meir. Shita. Why would you think Rabbi Meir disagreed in that situation? Doesn't Rabbi Meir believe Tfos Lashon Rishon? So in the first instance where he said Chetzia Ola, and then afterwards Chetzia Chatat, so that side of the Ola was binding, and that's what spread to the animal. The Chetzia Chatat was meaningless. And that's why he says it's an Ola. If you just reverse the case, then the Chatat would have been the first item, and then it would have spread to the entirety of the animal. And now you have a Chatat and not an Ola. And that Chatat, we'll see in a second, is Lemita. And so it makes a lot of sense that that's Rabbi Meir's position. Why does the Braita need to tell us Rabbi Meir agrees in that case? That's what we would have thought in Rabbi Meir's Shita anyway. The guy says, no, Ma'udutema, Ilav Dashmina. If you didn't tell me that, I would have thought, Havamina, time of the Rabbi Meir, Lav Mishum Defos Loshon Rishon. It's not because the first statement is binding. The reason that he says this is, Chatat Urevet Kreva. That when you have a Chatat mixed up with an item, it goes on the Mizbeach. Vafilo Ki Amar Chetzia Chatat. So we would be then indifferent as to whether you said chatat or la first, because as long as there's just a chatat mixed in there, the ola is the governing consideration, and it goes on the mizbeach, and we ignore the chatat. That's what you would have thought Rabbi Meir's position is. Kamash malan, delo. So that's what the Braita comes to dispel and say, that's not the reasoning behind Rabbi Meir. It's not because he believes that smooth revit bechatat goes on the mizbeach, but rather he believes that tfos lashon rishon. If that's the case, if he starts with an ola, it goes on the mizbeach. But if he starts with a chatat, then it is the mita. The question we have to ask here is, why, according to Rabbi Yossi, is it tamut? When Rabbi Yossi says, af gmar dvarav adam nitpas. So he has an animal that's half an ola, half a chatat. Why is it the mita? What makes it the mita over here? So Rashi claims that af gmar dvarav adam nitpas, v'olo havi mechuyav chatat. He's not chayav a chatat, he'll kach tamut. It's the equivalent of a chatat shekipru ba'ala. Because these Balim have no use for a chatat. They don't need a chatat over here. And so therefore when they're Magdisha chatat, it's going to be the mita. And that's how Rabbi Yossi views this, and that's why it's tamut. And similarly, Rabbi Meir, when it's reversed, and the chatat is first and the ola is second, in that case also, Rabbi Meir would agree it's the mita because of this problem of chatat. The Balei HaTosafot are very bothered by Rashi's statement, because they say, if he's not chayav in a chatat, it doesn't become kadosh b'kdushat chatat. You can't be makdisha chatat unless you're chayav a chatat. You're not chayav a chatat, then being makdisha chatat, you can't make a voluntary offering out of a chatat. So that doesn't work. So if Rashi's right that he's not chayav in a chatat, then the kdusha wouldn't be tofes. If that's the case, there's no chatat to speak of over here. So the Balei Tosafot come up with an alternative reason as to why it's tamut here, and it says, l'fikach perish ri, d'hocham mairi d'amar. The case here is where he says, Chetzia tmurat chatat. Our girsa does not have that. Our girsa is that he said chetzia ola, chetzia chatat. But the Ri says that when he said chetzia chatat, it didn't mean that he said half of it will be kadosh b'kdushat chatat, but rather it's tmurat chatat. He was exchanging a chatat onto the other half. That you can do because the kdushat of the chatat already exists, and therefore you can make the tmurat to transfer the kdusha over. But you can't create kdusha from nothing. Ex nihilo, you can't create kedusha because you're not chayav in a chatat. And therefore he disagrees with Rashi's view over here with regards to that he was not mechuyav a chatat. Rashi then explains the Havamin and Rabbi Meir that if it was chatat mi'urevit bo, that it would go on the mizbeach. Rashi says, afagav tatar vayu chayle, even though both the ola and the chatat devolve upon the animal, karva, it still goes on the mizbeach. Ho me'arev ba mide de chazil akrova. Because mixed in that is something that could go on the Mizbeach. And that carries the day. And the Shita Mekubetz in the Note Hey gives a little more depth to that, which is Gilyon. The Date Lagdish Kdusha, the Chazia Lakriva, Tve Mikdusha, the Azal Lemita. That a person when he's Makdish something, his intent or his leanings are towards something that will be on the Mizbeach, rather than something that's going to go to Mita. So here where he has a mix of Ola and Chatat, we're going to say that his preference or his leanings were towards the Ola side, and therefore he really meant for the whole thing to be an Ola, or that the Ola would govern, because he'd rather have something on the Mizbeach than go to Mita, which is just a waste. Alright, so that's the first Braita. Now we bring another Braita, Tanya Idoch. Amar Beimazu Chetzia Ola Chetzia Shlamim. So this case, instead of being an Ola and a Chatat, over here it's an Ola and a Shlamim. Kadosha Ve'ena Kreva. It is Kadosh, but it does not go on the Mizbeach. Oset Mura. That's the capacity to create Mura. Utmurato kiyotzebo, and its tmurah is identical to it, which is it doesn't go on Mizbeach. Mani, who's the author of this braita, clearly Rabbi Yossi. It's Rabbi Yossi who says, af gumar dvarav adam nipas, because according to Rabbi Meir, when you say, chetzia ola, chetzia shlamim, Chetzi Olah is effective before the Chetzi Shlamim ever shows up, and it would be an Olah. Whereas for Rabbi Yossi, it's both, and therefore you have to monetize it in order to sell it off and use half the proceeds for an Olah and half the proceeds for a Shlamim. Mar again says, Pshita, why would you have thought otherwise in Rabbi Yossi's position? He says, Afig Mar Dvarav Adam Nitpas, Tikdosha Ve'ena Kreva, that it's Kadosh and it can't go on the Mizbeach. Tmurata Itzrichale, we need the Tmura part of it to teach us. The Maud Tame, I would have thought, Nehi Dehi Lo Karva Tumuratati Grav, even though it can't go on the Mizbeach, maybe its Tmura should go on the Mizbeach. Kamash Malan, that it doesn't go on the Mizbeach, the Tmura. Maishnahi, the Lo Karva, why would you say that it can't go on the Mizbeach? That'd be like Kedusha Dechuya, because it itself is Kedusha Dechuya, because it's a mix of an Olah Shlamim, which you can't put both of them on the Mizbeach simultaneously, because an Olah is Kaleo, Shlamim needs to be eaten, and they have mutually exclusive features to them, so you couldn't put them on the Mizbeach. And you certainly can't shecht an animal and half of it be an Olah and half of it be a Shlamim, so that's why it's Kedusha Dechuya. Tmurata, Nami, Mikoach Kedusha Dechuya Ka'atyo. So too, the Tmura is a derivative of that Kedusha. So the Tmura can't be any better than its primary Kedusha. And since the primary Kedusha is Dukhuya, so too the Tmura is also Dukhuya in this case. And the Balei Tosafot here tried to explain what was the Havamina. Why would you have thought that the original Kedusha can't go on the Mizbeach, but the Tmura should be able to go on the Mizbeach? Same Tomar, Hechi Sakadat Chodamarkin. How could you ever say the Choshiv Tmura Tfei Mahaydata Mechmatei? How could the Tmura ever be better than the core Kedusha that it derives from? That's exactly what the Gemara answers in the end. That's the Kamash Balan. But then what was the Havamina? What was the forethought in this? His intent wasn't that the Tmura be half an Olah and half a Shlamim. That's what the animal is. The animal is a half Olah, half Shlamim. But he's matpisit and he brings it to be Tmura, ala daita shitei kula Tmura. He just has in mind that it'd be one entity, a total Tmura. So maybe that would make it better than the first animal that was half an Olah, half a Shlamim, but that's what he said. He said half Olah, half Shlamim. But then when he transfers that Kedusha onto another animal, he's trying to move the Kedusha in its entirety onto the new animal. So maybe we'd look at that as being more whole than the Chetzi Olah, Chetzi Shlamim. Oh, Takat Chetzi Olah, Takat Chetzi Shlamim. And it would either be in place of the half the Olah or half the Shlamim, Babi Kreva. He would either be an Olah or a Shlamim, and therefore maybe it should go on the Mizbeach, because we assume that he meant the whole Kedusha in that animal. That would have been the Havamina according to the Balei Tosafot. Now that's what the Gemara says in the Chiddush of that Braita, to tell you that Rabbi Yossi does not think that, and that it is Tmura Kiyotzeba, that Kiyotzeba, the Tmura, has the same din as the primary Kedusha, just like the primary Kedusha is Dukhuya, the derivative of that is also going to be Dukhuya, and won't end up on the Mizbeach. Amar Rabbi Yochanan. So now we have a statement of Rabbi Yochanan that we saw back in Zvachim. We'll see it again in Kreitot. It's also in the Gemara in Kedushin. It's a statement about Dichui, which is Behema Shel Shnei Shutafim. If you have an animal that belonged to two partners, Hikdish Chetziah Shalom, and he was Makdish, his half of the animal. Bechazar V'lakach Chetziah Acheret. Then he buys the second half. He buys out his partner in the second half of the animal. V'Hikdisha. He then is Makdish the second half of the animal. Kedosha. Ve'ena kreva. That animal is kadosh, but it cannot go on the mizbeach. You'll have to monetize it. I mean, you'll have to get a mum, and then it'll have to monetize it and bring with the proceeds a korban. And v'oset tmura, it has the capacity to create tmura, which means that it has enough kedushat aguf that it can create tmura, because kedushat beregabait does not create tmura. So there is high enough kedushah here that it is kedushat aguf. But it's not sufficiently kadosh to go on the Mizbeach because it was kedushat nidchet. It was a problematic kedusha. So it's a high enough level to create tmura, not a high enough level to allow it on the Mizbeach. And tmurata kiyotze ba. And its tmura is just like it, which means it won't go on the Mizbeach. Shma mina tlat. From this we would conclude three things. First of all, shma mina kedushat damim nidchet. When you are makdish something for its monetary value, that can create dichui. That's number one. Shma mina, balei dechayim nidachin. The other thing that we learn is that animals that are alive are subject to dichui. Shma mina, dichui miikaru av dichui. And also we learn that dichui from the outset is considered to be dichui. So let's go through each one of them. The easiest of which is balei chayim nidachin. That's a machloket in the Gemara in Yoma. We quoted it actually earlier in the Gemara. Rav and Rabbi Yochanan discussing that sugya in Yoma with the Shnei Sirim, if one of them dies, if the blood spills, and you have to replace them, is there Dichoy? There's a view there in the Gemara Yoma that only Shchutim have a din in Dichoy, but animals while they're alive don't have Dichoy. And there is an opinion that Balei Chaim are Idachim even when they're alive. You see from here that this, who is a live animal, is subject to Dichoy. So that's the one Shema Minah, that Balei Chaim Nidachim, they are subject to Dichoy. The one who holds that they're not subject to Dichoy is either because the animal in the being alive, or as if it has a mum over, and therefore, for while it's still alive, once the problem or the dichoy passes, it's as if it's good again. Just like a mum over, when the animal's alive, does not permanently disqualify it. So to dichoy does not disqualify it. So that's one way to explain the issue of the dichoy balei chaim didachin. The other way to explain it is that is to say that since they are not ra'ui la'akrava yet, since they are nitchim, as if they are mechusar zman, as if they are before the time period when they are ra'ui to be put on the mizbeach, and since it's pre the time that they're ra'ui, they're not disqualified. Or the fact that they can be redeemed after they get a mum in them shows or demonstrates that there is no such thing as dichui by animals that are alive. So those are the three different ways to view as to why the person who says balei chaim einan nidachim. But from our Gemara here, it's clear that this animal is alive, and yet it's still subject to dichoy, and so that tells you balei chaim are nidachim. The other one that is easy to understand is dichoy meikara. Dichoy meikara is really an oxymoron, because dichoy means that it was pushed away from being kadosh. So something that is kadosh can have dichoy. So that means it was kadosh at one point, then disqualified that has a dichoy now that ruins the kedusha that it had previously. That's the meaning of dichoy. On the other hand, if you're disqualified from the outset, that can't be called dichoy, because you were never ra'oi in order to be pushed away. So for that reason, there's a machloket as to whether dichoy mi'kara is considered dichoy. Similar to what we said with the balei chaim nidachim, when you have dichoy mi'kara, does that mean that it just hasn't reached the point where it is ra'oi to go on the mizbeach, and therefore the dichoy is not meaningful, because it never was kadosh to be disqualified, and so therefore it only becomes qualified once it's past that dichui. And that's why dichui mi'kara would not be meaningful or not be a problem. Or do we say dichui mi'kara is a disqualifying factor because at that moment when it should have been ro'ui the mizbeach, it was not ro'ui the mizbeach, and therefore the dichui takes effect. And that's what Rabbi Yochanan is saying from here. You can see that dichui mi'kara, something that was dichui, never was ro'ui the mizbeach. Nevertheless, it was disqualified from the mizbeach. Over here, this animal was never ro'oi the mizbeach. He didn't own the whole animal. He owned half of the animal, and then he bought out the other half of the animal. So when he did that, he was dichui meikara. When he first was makdish the animal, there was no possibility of putting it on the mizbeach. It was disqualified from the mizbeach, and therefore he had to make it kedushat damim from the outset, because the kedushat damim was the only kedushat that he could put on it. That was dichui meikara. It was disqualified or couldn't be kedushat aguf when he started out. And nevertheless, we say that that dichui is impactful. Now we get to the last one, which is kedushat damim nidchet. Even though you would have thought that there should be no dichui here, except in cases of kedushat aguf, where it had the possibility of going to mizbeach, and then was disqualified, and not in situations where it was just damim, and was never ra'ui the mizbeach, nevertheless, we're saying here that the kedushat damim is impactful enough to the point where dichui, through that kedushat damim, is sufficient to disqualify it from the mizbeach forever. The big problem with this, and that's what this large Balei Tosafot is dealing with, is how do you separate from dichui mikara from kedushat damim? Because if something can attain kedushat aguf, then it's not nitchet. If it can't attain kedushat aguf, then it has kedushat damim. So what the Balei Tosafot ask, it's a very basic question, and this is what they challenge Rashi in other places in Zbachim and Kedushin about, is that it sounds like from Rashi that dichui damim and dichui mikara are the same thing, which is that since in the outset it couldn't attain kedushat aguf, therefore it only attained kedushat damim, so that shows you that dichui mi'kara is nidchet. It also shows you that kedushat damim is nidchet, but they're one and the same. The reason that it's kedushat damim is because it's dichui mi'kara, or vice versa. The reason that it's dichui mi'kara is because it is kedushat damim. And how do you separate or segregate between these two different issues? So that's what the Balei Tosafot go about doing, is showing us that there can be differences. V'yesh lomar dashkachna shapir dichui mikara kadish kedushat aguf. So what Tosafot has to prove is that you can have something that's dichui mikara even though it has kedushat aguf. Kegon. So now he explains, give you a case. Mumar shachal chelev. A mumar who ate chelev, be frish korban alav, is mafrish korban chatat for the chelev that he ate. b'chazarbo, and then he does tshuva to have a dichui mi'ikara kedushat aguf. So there it is, dichui mi'ikara, because the animal that he was makdish for a korban chatat had attained kedushat aguf. The only problem was that the animal was fine and the chatat was necessary. Problem was that he wasn't a gavra that could bring the korban, because the only time you could bring a korban chatat is hashav midiato. Someone who, had he known the information, would have acted differently, then you can bring a chatat. But a person who had known the information wouldn't have changed his mind, then there's no chatat to bring. You can't bring a chatat in that case. This guy was a mumar, the achilat chalev. So had you told him at the time that he did it, bishogei, that he was eating chalev, wouldn't have made a difference. He would have continued to eat the chalev. Therefore, when he is mafrish the chatat afterwards, he's not someone who is chayav in a chatat, or couldn't bring a chatat. Then he does tshuva. Once he does tshuva, had he known then, at the time, that you ate the chalev b'shogeg, had he known, then he would have changed his mind, because he's done tshuva now. So now it becomes ra'oi. So you see here, something with kedushat aguf, that's subject to dichui mi'ikara. So even though it's kedushat aguf, so here you have a case, even though it's kedushat aguf, it's dichui mi'ikara. You can see the difficulty in the case, which is why exactly this mumar being mafrisha chatat. Meaning that if he doesn't care and he's eating chalev, why is he being mafrisha chatat for his eating of chalev b'shogeg? That seems a little unrealistic, but that's the way Tosfot comes up with a scenario like that. Inami, Dai de Perek Tarovet, in other cases, where you put dam into water. If you have the dam that you are trying to put on the Mizbeach, and then the dam drips into the water. If it has Mared dam, if the blood is more accentuated in the water, and therefore it has a reddish tint to it, then it has a din of dam. And the Gemara says over there, that's only if the water fell into the dam. But if the dam falls into the water, then it's comma, comma, batil. It's batel as it falls in. And it doesn't even matter in the end if it has mared dam, because it was already batel, because that's dichui mi'igara, v'kedushat aguf. You shechted the korban, the blood's coming up, you can do kabbalat the dam, just turns out that the mizrach that you're doing it into has water in it. And so as the real blood goes in there, it's batel. That's dichui mi'igara. It's kedushat aguf, but dichui mi'igara. So that's how the Bayit Tosafot come up with scenarios in which you can have dichui mi'igara separate or distinct from kedushat damim, because he gives you these cases where there's kedushat aguf and there's still dichui mi'ikara. From the outset, the item was disqualified and it still has a problem because it's dichui mi'ikara. So that's how he says that they are not one and the same. They can be separated. And you can have cases of kedushat damim even without the dichui mi'ikara, in cases where, or whereby if something has kedushat damim and was nitcheit, then the tmura created from that would not go on the mizbeach, as opposed to something that had kedushat aguf and was nitcheit, there's a possibility that that tmura could go on the mizbeach. So that'd be one nafkamina between them. And the other possibility is that is by monies. Not the animal itself, but if you have a pile of money, and that pile of money that he was mafrish for a korban, and then it was nitcheit, so that'd be damim, that could be nitcheit, even though it's not necessarily something that was nitcheit mi'ikara. So that's how they come up with scenarios that isolate each of these issues in order to separate them. Now let's apply them to the case that we have. We have a situation here where you have an animal that's owned by partners, and he's makdish the first half of the animal. So when he's makdish the first half of the animal, it's impossible for the kedusha to spread to the remainder of the animal, because he doesn't own the other half of the animal. That lack of ownership in the other half of the animal is what forces it to be nitcheit, that half of the animal can't go on the mizbeach, and therefore that's what creates the dichui over here. The fact that it is dichui because it's a bal chayim, it's still alive, but it's kedushat damim because he can't create kedushat aguf because he doesn't own the whole animal, he owns half the animal, and the only thing he has on that half the animal is kedushat damim. But then he buys the second half of the animal. When he buys the second half of the animal, we don't say that the kedusha from the first half of the animal spreads to the second half of the animal, and then migo that it is kedushat damim b'chetzia becomes kedushat damim b'kula, and since it's kedushat damim b'kula, it's kedushat aguf as well. That would have been a way to have it come out to be kedushat aguf, or you might have thought that's what happens when he buys the second half in, that the kedushat just spreads to the other half, and then after it spreads to the other half, that automatically makes it or elevates it to kedushat aguf. But we don't say that. That's why we're saying there's dichui over here. The reason we don't say that is for one of two reasons. And that is because even though when you say, regel shel zo ola, according to those that think that kedusha spreads to the remainder of the animal, or if it's a aver shel neshama tluya bo, when you makdish such an item, and then it spreads to the remainder of the animal, The reason that happens is because that's Bishat Hakdasha. At the time of Hakdasha, then the Dusha has the capacity to spread and then inundate the animal to the point where it becomes a whole Kedusha, and then it converts into Kedushat HaGuf. On the other hand, if it is a Kedusha that happened way back, and now you're trying to have it spread at a later date, that doesn't work. Because Kedusha like that only is manifest. Kedusha like that only takes effect at the moment of Hakdasha, but the time that you're ready taking from the Shutaf, the Maisa Hakdasha is already gone. It's long gone, and therefore it can't spread at this point. And therefore, whatever you do now is just an additional Hakdasha, but doesn't allow the original Hakdasha to spread and then become a single Hakdasha for the entirety of the animal. Now, even though when you say that you're Makdish Ragla Shal Zu Leola, when you're Makdish a single limb of the animal to an Ola, over there we say you sell off the animal to be a Korban Ola, and we don't say it's Nidchet. So what's the difference between being Makdish a leg and being Makdish half the animal? So the Bali Atosafot say back in Zvachim, that there is a big difference. In the case where you're Makdish, the one leg of the animal to be an Ola, you had the capacity to be Makdish the whole animal. Since you had the capacity to Makdish the whole animal, you create Kedushat HaGuf on that one item or that one Aver, according to those that believe that only that Aver remains Kadosh. But over here, since you don't have the capacity to spread the Kedushat beyond the area that you were Makdish it, you cannot elevate it to Kedushat HaGuf, or you basically create a Kedushat Nidchet from the outset because you lack the control. You lack the ability to put the Kedusha on the animal in its entirety. Therefore, your Kedusha here is curtailed, and it only becomes a Kedushat Damim, and not a Kedushat Haguf. And that's the same reason that the Kedusha may not spread at the time that you buy the second half of the animal, is because of the fact that you lack that control to create the level of Kedusha that would be strong enough to spread, because of the fact that you lacked the totality of ownership at the time that you were Makdish it, and therefore even when you buy the second half, it doesn't help at that point anymore. So that's the explanation of that statement of Rabbi Yochanan. And now the Gemara says, Amar Abaye, Akol Modim, everybody agrees, Eched Amar Chetzi Ola V'Chetzi Maser, if he says, half this animal should be an Ola, and half of it should be Maser, Divrei Akol Ola Kreva. Everybody agrees that it is an Ola. According to Rashi, the scenario over here is that there is no maser to be done. You can't be makdish something for maser. And so the reason it's divrei akol, it's an ola, is because you can't be makdish maser. That's what Rashi says. Dein maser kadosh ki haigavna. You can't make something into kedushat maser, elim ken you walk them out of the corral and it's the tenth one. So over here, when you make it half an ola and half a maser, the maser is meaningless. And so therefore the ola is the dictating kedusha, and the whole thing becomes a Kedushat Ola, according to everyone. Also, Heched Amar Chetziat Mura and Chetziat Ola, it's not in the Gemara, Rashi says it. If he was to say, made it half an Ola and half Tmura, also over there, everybody would agree that it is an Ola, because you can't create Tmura if there's not another animal of Hektesh over there that you're transferring the Kedushat from. So, absent that, the Tmura is also a meaningless statement, and that's why it's completely an Ola. The Gemara's question is, what happens if you make two meaningless statements, basically, which is, when you said chetziat tmura v'chetziat maser, you said both of those, my, which one of the kedushot over here, which one of these subpar kedushot takes effect over here? Tmura kreva, shekein noheged b'chol ha-kodoshim. Do we say that tmura is the ascendant kedusha over here because it applies to all kodoshim? Oh, dilma maser kreva, shekein makdish lefanav l'acharav. Or maybe the maser behema is a stronger form of kedusha, because not only can it devolve upon the animal that is maser, it affects the one before it and one after it if you make a mistake. Teku, the Gemara leaves that as unresolved. Tosafot is very bothered by Rashi's explanation over here. He says, I don't understand. If you are Makdishit b'maser, Rashi's right. It's meaningless. And if you're Makdishit b'tmura, when there's no animal to be Matpis from, then it's also meaningless. You know what meaninessly means? Chulin. It means there's nothing happening over here. Why does the Gemara even have a question? And therefore, the Bali Tosafot say that the scenario here is different. Perish read, the Mairi, Vadama mavir, so no, tachet hashevet. The guy who's letting the animals go out of the corral. Bachar, mishetetze asiri, even a deer. He says, I want, when the tenth one exits this corral, I say, hey, chetzia ola, v'chetzia maser. I want it to be half an ola and half a maser. Divrei akol, ola kreva. Everybody says that that makes it into ola. The kedushat hapeh, shikdisha la ola, adifa mikdushat maser. Because the Kedushat HaPeh of the Ola supersedes the Kedushat Maser that takes effect. And Tosafot qualifies that and says That's only if it was that he made it an olah before the rove of the animal exited the corral, because we saw in yesterday's daf, if once the rove of the animal exits the corral, then it's divrei rav, divrei atami, divrei mishomim. Hashem says it's maser, you say it's an olah, guess who wins? It's Hashem, and then it would be a maser. So he says it's a case where only a miut of the animal left the corral, therefore it's imbued with kedushat olah before it becomes kedushat maser, and that's why you are successful at making a kedushat olah over here. And he says with regards to the tumurah, it has to be that there's another animal there that you're making the tumurah with. And the question is this, when the animal goes out and you're making it tumurah and maser at the same time, which one takes effect? Which one is stronger? By olah, it's clear that the olah supersedes the maser. But when it comes to tumurah and maser, it's not as clear that the tumurah should be strong enough or should supersede the maser in a case where you have them devolve simultaneously on the animal. Just a note over here, the Rabbeinu Gershom has that Gemara that we noted yesterday at the end before the Mishnah, which was Pshita, and then the Gemara spoke about Ketocha de Dibor. We said yesterday the Gra and the Rabbeinu Gershom have it here in the Gemara. You can see that in the Od Bet in the Shita Mikubetzet, where he says that they brought over that Gemara Pshita over to here, and it's on that last piece of the Mishnah, the previous Mishnah. So now the Mishnah says, Arizo tachadzo. If the person says that this one is in place of the other one, tmuradzo, in exchange for that one, chalifadzo, instead of the other one, Arizo tmura. Those are languages of tmura, and you successfully create tmura. Zo mechulelatozo. This one is redeemed on that one. Einzo tmura. That's called pidyon. That's called redemption. That's not called tmura. So it's clear here that there are two different mechanisms. We spoke about this in the introduction to tmura. We'll speak about it at the end of today's daf as well. But there's a difference between pidyon and tmura. And you have to use the right language. If you want to create tmura, you got to use a language of exchange. And if you're going to do a pidyon, you have to use a language of redemption. And Mishnah's laying out for you which languages are languages of tmura and which languages are languages of pidyon. If it happens to be that it was, that this animal was kadosh, and it was a ba'mum, and now you say, harizeh mechulalat elzu, you say this animal that's kadosh and is a ba'mum is now mechulal on the other animal, you'll say the chulain, it works, because you basically just did a pidyon. And since this animal is ra'ui for pidyon, because it is psulei mukdashim, then it works. It's arif lasot tamim. And then the next animal you'll have to sell, monetize it, and with those monies, you'll bring the korban, the replacement korban. Lememra. So from our Mishnah, you would conclude that tachat lishna dat pusehu. That the word tachat is a language of tmura. It's a language that allows the kedushah to move from one animal to the other animal and create tmura. Reminu, is that really true? Kodshe berek abayit. When it comes to kodshe berek abayit, amar khalifat zo, tmurat zo, lo amar klum. He uses the words khalifan tmura. It's meaningless in that case because there's no such thing as tmura by berek abayit. So using terminology that is of tmura is a meaningless statement, like our Mishnah. It lists tmura and khalifa as languages of tmura. Tachat zo, mechulelet alzo. If you lose the language of tachat or mechulelet, dvarav kayamim. That's pidyon. That's redemption. So you see here in the Braita that the word tachat appears in the list of languages that are for pidyon, redemption. Whereas in our Mishnah, it falls under the languages of tmura. V'isakadatcha lishna did pusei. If you think it's a language that's good for exchange, meaning pairing and putting one onto the other, maishna resha or maishna seifa. What's the difference between the resha and the seifa? How can you distinguish? If you're telling me that it means itpuse, then you put languages of itpuse in the resha, languages of itpuse in the seifa, and you tell me one works, one doesn't work, what's the distinction between them? So it's obvious that you have a stira here in the understanding of the word tachat. So Rabbaye, tachat mishkachat la lishna di itpuse, belishna da chule. The language of tachat can be used in both manifestations. As Rashi over here says that the word le'atpuse means lashon yushami mitafsan pidyonan, klomar, mi'avde tmura. So tfisa over here means that it creates tmura because it is to face the other animal and the kedushah remains on both of them. So the word tachat can be a lashon of tmura and it can be a lashon of achule of pidyon. Lishne dar puse, I can prove to you that it can be a lashon of tmura dechtiv because it says ve'im tachta tamod abaheret, that when it's speaking about the nigaim, it says that instead of it, in place of it, this baheret came up. So you see that it is standing instead of another item, and that's the lashon of tmura. Da'chule, and a lashon of redemption, we find yichtiv, tachad anechoshet avizahav. Pasuk Yishayahu says that in place of the copper, I will bring gold. Tachad anechoshet, that was taken away from you by the nations, then I will replace that with zahav, which is the equivalent of pidyon, which is that it's not standing in its stead, but rather it's a complete replacement for the item. It's a pidyon, a redemption or a chule. The original item is gone, and now this one is, it is now the new item that will be there because the nechoshet was taken away. Behilchach. Therefore, gabe kodshei mizbeach, the avdin tmura, by kodshei mizbeach, where tmura is a possibility, lishna det puseyu. Then the meaning of tachat in that context is tmura. Gabe kodshei rebetek abayit, the lo avdin tmura, where it can't make tmura, then lishna da chuleyu. Then the language is a language of redemption. Now, Rashi says over here something very strange. He says, Hilkach, since both languages are found in the Psukim, they're both reasonable explanations of it, velo masrua katuv velo lachachamim. Then the pasuk gives it over to the chachamim, the meimar, hecha havi tachat at pusiv, hecha havi chilu. The chachamim get to decide when tachat works like a tmura and when tachat works like a pidyon. It's a very strange statement because you don't have to go that way, and you can see that in the Gra. The Gra says, but I don't know what Rashi's talking about. Lo yachalti lehoma. I don't get what Rashi's saying. But nearly the mistama datu shalodama lashon moel. The reason that it works in each case is because the person wants to be effective. So in the case of Korban or Kedushat Mizbeach, the effective terminology of Tachat would be that it is Tmura. If in the case of Bedekabai, the effective language would be that it's Pijon. And so basically it's contextually driven. Whatever the context is will determine the meaning of the statement. You don't need the Chachamim for that. It's just that you want something that works, and therefore in each context, you'll make it a word that is meaningful in that context. That's why the Gra explains this difference, rather than Rashi's understanding that it's Masrua Katuv the Chachamim. Avar Rova, afilu b'kodshei mizbeach, even by kodshei mizbeach, mishkacha ba lishna d'chuleyu, we can find a lashon pidyon kagom, shayah hekdesh bamum, like the case in our Mishnah, where it's hekdesh bamum, and it's kodshei mizbeach, it still is lashon v'chuleyu over there, because again, there it's effective in doing pidyon, and you'd rather do pidyon than do the aveira of tmura. And even though Rava's statement is almost explicit in the Mishnah, the difference is that in the Mishnah it uses a lashon mechulelet. Over here he's saying even the word tachat can figure in and work as mechulelet, and that's his chiddush, that even the word tachat, which the Mishnah does not mention, can work in this situation. So Rava says Abaye's distinction is not absolute, because there are times with mitkochi mizbeach that you can also have a lashon vachule. Amar Ravashi, afilu b'baal mum nami, mishkachat la mishna dachule. Even by a baal mum, you can find a lashon of tmura, umishkachat lishna dat putse. And you find lashon of tmura, yado akodesh cholavi. If your hand is on the kodesh animal, then it is chol. Yado achol, if his hand is on the chol animal, kadosh abo, then it is kadosh. This is the key element of what was said by Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch in his explanation as to the key difference. The key differentiating factor between pidyon and tmura is exactly what's being said here by Rav Ashi, and that is, if your hand is on the kodesh animal, and you say, lashon of tachat, and this is an animal that's hektesh ba'mum, in that case, having your hand on the kodesh animal shows that you're trying to transfer the kedusha off the animal, and that's exactly what pidyon is, transferring the kedusha off. On the other hand, if your hand is on the whole animal, then the lashon of tachat means that you're trying to bring the kedusha onto this animal, and therefore it will be successful at creating the tmura in that case, because this is something to do with kedushat haguf that has a mum in it, and it will be considered to be tmura. So even within the world of a single item, contextually, the way that you do it, it has impact. And this is what Rav Shamshon Rafael Hirsch said is the key difference between pidyon and tmura, which is pidyon focuses on the kedusha of the animal that is kadosh. And therefore it's a proper reverence for the kedushat korban. And given that, you're acting appropriately in dealing with the kedusha and acknowledging the elevated status of this animal and moving that kedusha to another item. On the other hand, the tmura focuses on the whole animal. It's about taking the kedusha from one and putting on the other as if these are just objects that you can throw around and you can move the kedusha around, and that it is a disregard for the kedusha. And that's why it's tmura in that case, because your focus is on the animal of chulin, not on the animal of hekdesh. And Rav Ashi says that even Rava's statement is not mukhletet, because even within the world of kodshei mizbeach that have a mum in them, there too the word tachat sometimes can have a meaning of achulei and sometimes can have a meaning of atpuse. It's not clear that Rav Ashi really argues on Rava. It could be that Rava's case is a case where he didn't put his hands on the animals at all. Or you could argue that they are arguing more fundamentally, and Rava's speaking about a case where it's kadam mumam lehekdesham, the case where the mum preceded the hekdesh, and that's why it is a baal mum that has no Kedushat HaGufa did, and that's why there's no Tmura, and that's why it's Mechula that when you use Tachat, Rav Ashi comes along to say, no, even in a case where it is Kadam Hekdesham Nemuman, even in that situation, depending on which animal you put your hand on, that could still have impact as to the movement of Kedushat being a Tmura or a Pidyon, and he's arguing on Rava's contention that it has to be Kadam Muman Hekdesham. Okay, we're going to stop here, 10 lines down on the top of Chav Zayin Amud Aleph.